Chapter 6. Because I am ill, he wouldn't kiss me, though I wanted him to. Wouldn't he? Then he was a very poor, slack, twisted sort of fellow. Betty, I've never kissed you since you stood beside me as my little wife, 12 years and a half old. May I kiss you now? Though Betty by no means desired his kisses, as he had enough of the spirit of Cunegund in Schiller's ballad to test his daring. If you have courage to venture, yes, sir. Said she. But you may die for it, mind. He came up to her, and imprinted a deliberate kiss full upon her mouth, saying, may many others follow. She shook her head, and hastily withdrew, though secretly pleased at his hardihood. The excitement had supported her for the few minutes as he had passed in his presence, and she could hardly drag herself back to her room. Her husband summoned the servants, and, sending them to her assistance, went off himself for a doctor. The next morning Reynard waited at the court till he had learned from the medical man that Betty's attack promised to be a very light one, or, as it was expressed, very fine, and in taking his leave sent up a note to her. Now I must be gone. I promised your mother I would not see you yet, and she may be angered if she finds me here. Promise to see me as soon as you are well? He was of all men then living one of the best able to cope with such an untimely situation as this. A contriving, sagacious, gentle-mannered man, a philosopher who saw that the only constant attribute of life is change, he held that, as long as she lives, there is nothing finite in the most impassioned attitude a woman may take up. In 12 months his girl wife's recent infatuation might be as distasteful to her mind as it was now to his own. In a few years her very flesh would change, so said the scientific. Her spirit, so much more ephemeral, was capable of changing in one. Betty was his, and it became a mere question of means, how to effect that change. During the day Mrs. Dornell, having closed her husband's eyes, returned to the court. She was truly relieved to find Betty there, even though on a bed of sickness. The disease ran its course, and in due time Betty became convalescent, without having suffered deeply for her rashness, one little speck beneath her ear, and one beneath her chin, being all the marks she retained. The squire's body was not brought back to King's Hintock, where he was born, and where he had lived, before wedding his Sue, there he had wished to be buried. No sooner had she lost him than Mrs. Dornell, like certain other wives, though as he had never shown any great affection for him while he lived, awoke suddenly to his many virtues, and zealously embraced his opinion about delaying Betty's union with her husband, which as he had formerly combated strenuously. Poor man, how right he was, and how wrong was I. 18 was certainly the lowest age at which Mr. Reynard should claim her child, nay, it was too low. Far too low. So desirous was she of honoring her lamented husband's sentiments in this respect, that she wrote to her son-in-law suggesting that, partly on account of Betty's sorrow for her father's loss, and out of consideration for his known wishes for delay, Betty should not be taken from her till her 19th birthday. However much or little Stephen Reynard might have been to blame in his marriage, the patient man now almost deserved to be pitied. First Betty's skittishness, now her mother's remorseful volt face. It was enough to exasperate anybody, and he wrote to the widow in a tone which led to a little coolness between those hitherto firm friends. However, knowing that he had a wife, not to claim but to win, and that young Phillipson had been packed off to sea by his parents, Stephen was complacent to a degree, returning to London, and holding quite aloof from Betty and her mother, who remained for the present in the country. In town he had a mild visitation of the distemper he had taken from Betty, and in writing to her, he took care not to dwell upon its mildness. It was now that Betty began to pity him for what as he had inflicted upon him by the kiss, and her correspondence acquired a distinct flavor of kindness thenceforward. owing to his rebuffs, Reynard had grown to be truly in love with Betty in his mild, placid, durable way, in that way which perhaps, upon the whole, tends most generally to the woman's comfort under the institution of marriage, if not particularly to her ecstasy. Mrs. Dornell's exaggeration of her husband's wish for delay in their living together was inconvenient, but he would not openly infringe it. He wrote tenderly to Betty, and soon announced that he had a little surprise in store for her. The secret was that the king had been graciously pleased to inform him privately, through a relation, that his majesty was about to offer him a barony. Would she like the title to be Ival? Moreover, he had reason for knowing that in a few years the dignity would be raised to that of an earl, for which creation he thought the title of Wessex would be eminently suitable, considering the position of much of their property. As Lady Ival, therefore, and future Countess of Wessex, he should beg leave to offer her his heart a third time. He did not add, as he might have added, how greatly the consideration of the enormous estates at King's Hintock and elsewhere which Betty would inherit, and her children after her, had conduced to this desirable honor. Whether the impending titles had really any effect upon Betty's regard for him, I cannot state, for she was one of those close characters who never let their minds be known upon anything. That such honor was absolutely unexpected by her from such a quarter is, however, certain, and she could not deny that Stephen had shown her kindness, forbearance, even magnanimity, had forgiven her for an errant passion which he might with some reason have denounced, notwithstanding her cruel position as a child entrapped into marriage unable to understand its bearings. Her mother, in her grief and remorse for the loveless life as he had led with her rough, though open-hearted, husband, made now a creed of his merest whim, and continued to insist that, out of respect to his known desire, her son-in-law should not reside with Betty till the girl's father had been dead a year at least, at which time the girl would still be under 19. Letters must suffice for Stephen till then. It is rather long for him to wait, apostrophe Betty hesitatingly said one day. What? Apostrophe said her mother. From you? Not to respect your dear father, apostrophe, of course it is quite proper, apostrophe said Betty hastily. I don't gainsay it. I was but thinking that apostrophe, in the long slow months of the stipulated interval her mother tended and trained Betty carefully for her duties. Fully awake now to the many virtues of her dear departed one, she, among other acts of pious devotion to his memory, rebuilt the church of King's Hintock village, and established valuable charities in all the villages of that name, as far as to Little Hintock, several miles eastward. In superintending these works, particularly that of the church building, her daughter Betty was her constant companion, and the incidents of their execution were doubtless not without a soothing effect upon the young creature's heart. As he had sprung from girl to woman by a sudden bound, and few would have recognized in the thoughtful face of Betty now the same person who, the year before, had seemed to have absolutely no idea whatever of responsibility, moral or other. Time passed thus till the squire had been nearly a year in his vault, and Mrs. Dornell was duly asked by letter by the patient Reynard if she were willing for him to come soon. He did not wish to take Betty away, if her mother's sense of loneliness would be too great, but would willingly live at King's Hintock a while with them. Before the widow had replied to this communication, she one day happened to observe Betty walking on the south terrace in the full sunlight, without hat or mantle, and was struck by her child's figure. Mrs. Dornell called her in, and said suddenly, "Have you seen your husband since the time of your poor father's death?" "Well, yes, Mama," says Betty, coloring. "What against my wishes and those of your dear father? I am shocked at your disobedience." "But my father said 18, ma'am, and you made it much longer." "Why, of course out of consideration for you. When have ye seen him?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, apostrophe, stammered Betty. In the course of his letters to me, he said that I belonged to him, and if nobody knew that we met, it would make no difference. And that I need not hurt your feelings by telling you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well? Apostrophe, apostrophe, so I went to Casterbridge. That time you went to London about 5 months ago, apostrophe, and met him there? When did you come back? Apostrophe, dear mama, it grew very late, and he said it was safer not to go back till next day, as the roads were bad. And as you were away from home, apostrophe, I don't want to hear any more. This is your respect for your father's memory, apostrophe, groaned the widow. When did you meet him again? Apostrophe, oh, not for more than a fortnight. Apostrophe, apostrophe, a fortnight. How many times have ye seen him altogether? Apostrophe, I'm sure, mama, I've not seen him altogether a dozen times. Apostrophe, apostrophe, a dozen. And 18 and a half years old barely. Apostrophe, twice we met by accident, apostrophe, pleaded Betty. Once at Abbott's Cernel, and another time at the Red Lion, Melchester. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh thou deceitful girl. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Dornell. An accident took you to the Red Lion, whilst I was staying at the White Hart. I remember you came in at 12 o'clock at night, and said you'd been to see the cathedral by the light o' the moon. Apostrophe, apostrophe, my ever-honored mama, so I had. I only went to the Red Lion with him afterwards. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh Betty, Betty. That my child should have deceived me even in my widowed days. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but, my dearest mama, you made me marry him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, says Betty with spirit, and of course I've to obey him more than you now. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Dornell sighed. All I have to say is, that you'd better get your husband to join you, as soon as possible, apostrophe, she remarked. To go on playing the maiden like this, I'm ashamed to see you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she wrote instantly to Stephen Reynard. I wash my hands of the whole matter, as between you two, though I should advise you to openly join each other, as soon as you can, if you wish to avoid scandal. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he came, though not till the promised title had been granted, and he could call Betty archly my lady. Apostrophe, apostrophe, people said in after years, that she and her husband were very happy. However that may be, they had a numerous family, and she became in due course first Countess of Wessex, as he had foretold. The little white frock in which she had been married to him at the tender age of 12 was carefully preserved among the relics at King's Hintock Court, where it may still be seen by the curious a yellowing pathetic testimony to the small count taken of the happiness of an innocent child in the social strategy of those days, which might have led, but providentially did not lead, to great unhappiness. When the Earl died, Betty wrote him an epitaph, in which she described him as the best of husbands, fathers, and friends, and called herself his disconsolate widow. Such is woman, or rather, not to give offense by so sweeping an assertion, such was Betty Dornell. It was at a meeting of one of the Wessex Field and Antiquarian Clubs that the foregoing story, partly told, partly read from a manuscript, was made to do duty for the regulation papers on deformed butterflies, fossil ox horns, prehistoric dung mixins, and such like, that usually occupied the more serious attention of the members. This club was of an inclusive and intersocial character, to a degree, indeed, remarkable for the part of England in which it had its being. Dear, delightful Wessex, whose statuesque dynasties are even now only just beginning to feel the shaking of the new and strange spirit without, like that which entered the lonely valley of Ezekiel's vision, and made the dry bones move, where the honest squires, tradesmen, parsons, clerks, and people still praise the Lord with one voice for his best of all possible worlds. The present meeting, which was to extend over 2 days, had opened its proceedings at the museum of the town whose buildings and environs were to be visited by the members. Lunch had ended, and the afternoon excursion had been about to be undertaken, when the rain came down in an obstinate spatter, which revealed no sign of cessation. As the members waited, they grew chilly, although it was only autumn, and a fire was lighted, which threw a cheerful shine upon the varnished skulls, urns, pinnates, tesserae, costumes, coats of mail, weapons, and missiles, animated the fossilized ichthyosaurus and iguanodon, while the dead eyes of the stuffed birds, those never absent familiars in such collections, though murdered to extinction out of doors, flashed as they had flashed to the rising sun above the neighboring moors on the fatal morning, when the trigger was pulled which ended their little flight. It was then that the historian produced his manuscript, which he had prepared, he said, with a view to publication. His delivery of the story having concluded as aforesaid, the speaker expressed his hope that the constraint of the weather and the paucity of more scientific papers would excuse any inappropriateness in his subject. Several members observed that a storm-bound club could not presume to be selective, and they were all very much obliged to him for such a curious chapter from the domestic histories of the county. The president looked gloomily from the window at the descending rain, and broke a short silence by saying that though the club had met, there seemed little probability of its being able to visit the objects of interest set down among the agenda. The treasurer observed that they had at least a roof over their heads, and they had also a second day before them. A sentimental member, leaning back in his chair, declared that he was in no hurry to go out, and that nothing would please him so much as another county story, with or without manuscript. The colonel added that the subject should be a lady, like the former, to which a gentleman known as the Spark said here. ... Though these had spoken in jest, a rural dean who was present observed blandly that there was no lack of materials. Many, indeed, were the legends and traditions of gentle and noble dames, renowned in times past in that part of England, whose actions and passions. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.